Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And we got Norm back with us today.
Hey guys.
How's it going there, Norm?
It's doing well, doing well.
So this week we're going to talk about a little movie called Resident Evil.
Well, I think it was more than a movie, but...
there are a lot of movies. But if you need to wake the dead and you don't have any T-Virus available, you can always call in the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code Cigar Nerds for 20% off your order and your subscriptions. I mean, some days I'm feeling dead. I get a little Strike Force in me. I at least wake up enough to not be a zombie.
Well, yeah. And I'm on the, you know, corporate aspect of things. So when I want global domination... That's what I'm calling for.
If you're a wayward umbrella employee and you're surrounded by zombies, who do you call? You call in a strike force.
Exactly. Veteran-owned company. Kick the can and the zombie ass.
Yeah, in flavors.
Yeah. The grape is actually pretty good. I've had it. Yeah. Mix it with some grape Gatorade. Good to go.
Is that like grape squared?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I mixed the orange with the grape. That was a weird experiment.
Would that be a grape inception?
Yes.
That came off so bad.
Hey, dog, we heard you like grape, so we put grape in your grape.
Yeah, shit, we're not even a minute and a half in. The shenanigans have already ensued.
So, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
This week, we got the Alec Bradley post-embargo. This is going to sport a Honduras wrapper with Nicaraguan and Honduran binder with a Nicaraguan and Honduran filler.
Yeah, this is Alec Bradley's attempt at a kind of honoring the post-embargo tradition of cigars that have come since, you know, the original Cuban embargo, and also to kind of looking forward to the horizon of, you know, maybe, you know, deregulating our dealings with Cuba and, you know, eventually return to the market of Cuban cigars.
Yeah, I had, you know, some folks even as recently as last night ask me about Cuban cigars, and I don't know. I mean, for me, I feel like there's a lot of hype, and, you know, it's just because you're told you can't have it that's, you know, the draw and appeal. Not saying that there aren't some good Cubans out there, but I'm
it's kind of like drinking moonshine.
Yeah.
Like, if moonshine was on the shelf, I wouldn't buy it. But the fact that you can't get it, you're always like, damn, I'd have some moonshine.
You know, it's that famous you want what you can't have scenario.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. So, I mean, you know, as we just lit up and everything, getting acclimated with the cigar, initially I'm going to call this one a medium, maybe medium full. You know, I'm sure that as I progress and get into the, you know, second, third, and down to the, you know, final third of the cigar, I'm hoping I'll get a little bit of strength out of this. But, you know, this kind of being paid homage to older classics, I don't know. You know, this may end up being more of a medium for me.
Kind of a cool label, too. It looks almost like wings with, you know, a Cuban flag and an American flag.
I know, the artwork on the label looks very good.
Stylized together.
The whole packaging is pretty good looking. You just, in looking at the cigar, the wrapper's got a good finish. Looks great. Everything looks pretty smooth.
I mean, it's Alec Bradley. I mean, you know, we were talking a little bit off air, and, you know, the last time we reviewed the Tempest and some of the other cigars, there's only a couple Alec Bradleys that really strike me as really good and memorable smokes, you know. But one of the things that's always consistent is their, you know, construction, and I never have issues with draws or, you know, so the quality is always there. And, you know, that's a lot, you know, to be said, you know, for a company, because there's companies out there that can make a good smoke, but if I can't actually smoke it and I'm constantly dealing with plug cigars and that type of thing, then it becomes a frustrating experience.
Yeah, and the, you know, every Alec Bradley I've had has been a good cigar. They may not necessarily fit my flavor profile, but they've always been like a good cigar for someone. Maybe not me, you know, particularly the flavor wise, but they've always been a good quality smoke.
No, and another interesting fact, little factoid about the cigar is that it was at the time of release a very limited release. They only released 1,000 boxes each of, I believe it was the Robusto Gordo or 6x60 size and a Toro size, and then another 500 boxes of a Lancero.
Hmm.
So if you can find this cigar still on shelves, then
give it a try.
I'd say give it a shot.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back like a zombie coming from back from the dead.
My name is Alice. I work for the Umbrella Corporation, the largest and most powerful commercial entity in the world. I was head of security at a secret high-tech facility called The Hive, a giant underground laboratory developing experimental viral weaponry. There was an incident. A virus escaped. A lot of people died. The trouble was, they didn't stay dead. The computer that controlled the Hive was a state-of-the-art artificial intelligence, the Red Queen. The Red Queen responded to the threat of the viral outbreak in an extreme way. She went homicidal.
You're all going to die down here.
And welcome back to the show. It's time to talk about some zombies.
Yeah, I don't...
I have a vague recollection we've done this before.
I feel like we have.
Don't like way back bit. Episode 2 was like zombie episode.
Yeah.
Well, zombies are such a, you know, easy thing to make TV shows / movies / books about.
Yeah.
Video games.
I mean,
graphic novels. I mean, think of the whole nine yards.
AMC TV shows. It's zombies are quite popular.
I mean, you know, I believe that, you know, that's a visceral fear of, like, humans in general, that this dead body is going to now come get back up and try to eat me.
Yes. It's like, I don't know, there's always been an irrational fear of the dead and, you know, in pretty much all, you know, I'd say most cultures.
I mean, there are entire, you know, celebrations to appease the dead so they stay where they are.
Yeah, I know a lot of the cemeteries in, like, Louisiana and places like that, like, they will actually, like, you know, some of the official burial ceremonies will, like, encase the body in concrete the whole nine yards. Like,
oh, no, that's...
You know, yeah. Just...
In some places, that is...
Yeah, I've seen some with, like, the metal cage over the... just in case.
I know for a fact in Florida, not to get, you know, morose or anything like that, but that's a real thing, and that's just how the law is. Yes, they literally pour concrete over the top. You're staying down there, damn it.
We just had the recent release of the theoretical final Resident Evil movie, the final chapter.
Yeah, I don't know. Allegedly. I don't think it's the end. But not only did we have the movie, but we also had a release of a video game as well. So, I mean, I don't think...
What number is the game again? What number are we at now?
Seven, I think?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So there's almost as many movies as there are games at this point. We're going to take a look back at the Resident Evil franchise that started in 2002 with Resident Evil, based on the...
What? That was the actual name of the first one?
Yeah. Based on the, like, you know, original survival horror game Resident Evil, which, yeah, it's probably one of the, I don't know, most famous game franchises that, yeah, you know, and it's gone through a lot of changes where it started off with survival horror where you were severely underpowered, where, you know, you really had to conserve resources and stuff, to... up to, like, straight-up freaking action games that where you were just blasting zombies right and left. And now, with the new Resident Evil, I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but it's kind of gone back to that survival horror where it's very claustrophobic and you're definitely outgunned and outnumbered and having to fight your way to survive.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the cool concepts that Resident Evil brought to the table, was the ability to kind of combine herbs and stuff like that. So if you needed health or whatever the case, but Then the puzzle solving aspect of the games was also, you know, what I found to be quite unique and one of the big staples that always really appealed to me, because not only was it, oh, I need to actually like conserve ammo and think about that, but then it's like I need to rack my brain to figure out this puzzle and how to get to this access of the map and that type of stuff. So
yeah, the first movie was released in 2002, starring Mila Jovovich, directed by Paul W.S. Anderson and written by Anderson. Which, one of the things, looking at this too, it's kind of unique about this film series is a lot of long-running series, say like Mission Impossible, Fast and Furious, the directors change film to film. But with this one, there's a different director for like the second two, but Paul Anderson wrote all the movies and he directed four out of the six. So there's a consistency with these movies that you don't get a lot with some longer franchises.
I mean, that's the thing is, you know, Resident Evil has always felt relatively familiar. You know, if you've played any of the video games or, you know, if you've only seen a movie here or there, like it never deviated too much, you know, from, you always had the Umbrella Corp, you always had the T-Virus, and even though some of your lead characters may have changed, it always sort of evolved around, you know, more so Alice and her struggles.
And that was the thing about this first movie. It there's no characters other than, like I said, Umbrella Corp and the T-Virus from the video games.
Yeah.
It kind of starts off in the mansion and the underground labs from that first game, but other than that, you don't see any of the video game characters or stories. The only kind of holdover from the game, eventually they run into, you know, zombies, of course, but then they run into the liquor monsters, like the weird dog-like tongue creatures. And that looked like it was straight out of the video game.
Yes.
Other than that, that's one thing they've done, even though they've kind of, or at least in this first movie, stayed away from using actual game characters. They've always, the monsters in the movies have always been straight out of the video games.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, I like this one, you know, just from the aspect of, I mean, you were confined to this underground, you know, Biocorp lab, and, you know, this artificial AI who is this little girl, and
the creepy little girl.
The red
kids
queen.
Make movies yes. Creepy. That's
the creepy little girl.
You're all gonna die down here. That is just the worst that you're like, oh yeah, that just creeps you out when this little girl looks at you and you're like, you're all gonna die down here. It's like, ooh, no. I would like freaking Spartan kick that girl. She popped up.
I like to think, if they had just listened to the girl at the very beginning of the movie, none of this would have happened.
Yes.
It's like the girl, okay, yes, I closed this down because there's a deadly set of monsters down here, and then you had to come in and blow a hole in my door and yeah. Come
it's
fuck
like, don't
all
cut
of
off the
up.
Power. That's going to release all the monsters. And that was one thing, you know, the computer, it was supposed to have been the big bad guy, but it was actually almost the good guy. She was doing what she thought was right. She was like, I am trying, like, these people in this facility are fucked. I'm trying to protect the rest of the world by locking this shit down.
Yeah, they're already dead. Don't worry about them.
Partially dead, more so mutated.
Dead.
Hey, they're dead. D-E-D.
But yeah, then you have, of course, you know, it starts off with, and that's one thing, it was very video game of this movie, is it starts off with Alice, who is a umbrella security guard, who's like the head of security for this facility, waking up with amnesia in this room. And that's almost like when you're a character in the game, starting off, you know, they may not give you, like in that original game, when you started off, you know, going exploring this mansion, you didn't know shit about what happened. You know, you're kind of like a, you know, unknown character finding out the story as you go. And Alice was really that point of view for the audience where it's, oh, this is almost like a video game. She wakes up.
Yeah.
There's a gun thing that I don't know how to get into, and there's some kind of mystery going on. Very much like, you know, doing a playthrough of Resident Evil.
Yeah, basically.
And I mean,
player one, start.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, I got to say, I really liked, because you were building the foundation of the game and truly learning as you go. So, I mean, you know, it just added that whole element of literally every turn of a doorknob was a surprise because you didn't know what waited behind you. And those freaking cutscenes of the doorknob turning, and then all of a sudden you just thrust into this unknown, like, was always, like, kind of intimidating.
And it was, like, that one part where she's kind of wandering around trying to figure out what's going on. She opens the front door, and, like, there's this kind of big wind picks up, and she kind of, like, gets scared and runs back to the side. In the original game, if you ever tried to open the front door of the mansion, like, dogs would attack you and run you back into the mansion. So it was...
You're stuck.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's one thing they eventually find in this movie is the zombie dogs, which were always a bitch in the game because it was hard to hit those little bastards when they're running around. It's like,
come on, man. We got all this advanced weaponry, and I got 8 rounds of 9mm.
Yeah.
And a red herb and a green herb.
That was one thing, too. If you looked at the scientists and stuff in the lab, all their names was like Dr. Green, Dr. Red, Dr. Blue.
Yes.
Kind of like, you know, trying to find the old herbs and stuff in the original game.
It's like, okay, this guy is obviously going to be helpful. You, not so much.
That guy's Dr. Blue. There's a blue door. He's probably got a key on him. Yeah. Yeah, and eventually she's joined by the Umbrella Sanitation Squad, which, yeah, kind of euphemism for we're going to kill everybody and cover some stuff up. With... Speaking of Fast and Furious, Michelle Rodriguez playing Rain.
Yes.
But yeah, I heard, you know, originally this was supposed to be written and directed by George A. Romero, who eventually backed out of it because they didn't really like his script. But in his version, it was very close to the original video game. He was going to use Chris Redfield and Jill Valentine and like the original characters from the game. And they went with this more independent story route.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I kind of put George A. Romero and his writing style and everything kind of on its own playing field. Like, I think it's smart of him to not get involved with, you know, some of these other franchises when they want to deviate from what he envisions, just because, I mean, I...
Yeah, that would have been a much different movie, because he's all about, you know, survival horror. He is the godfather of the, you know, this style of zombie franchise.
But, you know, I like the fact, too, that we're talking a lot about zombies. And, you know, the T-virus itself, like, I really like the different mutations and all of that. Because you don't just get this shambling, slow-walking character. Like, I mean, you get truly menacing opponents. I mean, if there's
science.
Yeah.
And especially in this one, there was that very claustrophobic feeling to it. It was almost like Die Hard with zombies because they're stuck in these small corridors, outnumbered. You know, one zombie you can handle, but like 30, or how they, I think they said it was 500 employees in this facility. So you're dealing with 500 zombies in very closed quarters.
Yeah.
And the liquor monster, when you first see it too, when it feeds on somebody, it mutates. Like, kind of like in the game, you would get like... the early version, and then as you played on, you'd get the harder and harder version as you went.
Yeah, and just like as the successive movies come along, even the basic zombie adversary just gets worse and worse and worse.
And then the other thing about rewatching this recently is it holds up, but the CGI effects are... Whew, those original liquor monsters do not look good in that first movie.
No, I mean, but you got to think, man. That was 2002. Like,
yeah, movies show their age really quickly when it comes to effects and sci-fi.
But other than that monster, most of it was practical effects and looked like a, you know, Romero-esque zombie film. Even the whatchamacallit, hell, I can't remember now. But the dogs, you look like some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. They had made, like, those were real dogs, at least in this first movie, that they put these
vests
on with all this, like, hanging flesh and stuff and did, like, makeup effects on these freaking Dobermans.
Wouldn't it be awesome, like, behind the scenes, it just shows the Doberman and it's like, you know, some kind of dog treat just over there licking itself or something.
Oh, who's a good zombie dog?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, fetch that forearm.
Like, you know, I was thinking about it. I was like, I'd have a hard time doing this movie because I'd be like, I want to pet everything.
Ew, they're sticky. But at the end of this movie, you know, when Alice is the lone, the John McClane, if you will, the lone survivor, her and her sidekick Matt, who was trying to uncover Umbrella's shenanigans, both get captured and... He gets wheeled off to the Nemesis program, and then she wakes up in this abandoned hospital, obviously been experimented on, and when she makes it outside, it's very much the opening of Resident Evil 2, where she's alone in this apocalyptic city and then finds the shotgun, which was always the highlight of any of the Resident Evil. Because you always started with that one little Beretta 92 and limited ammo. And when you finally found the shotgun, you're like, oh, I can fuck some shit up now.
Yeah. But I got to say, like, you know, one of the scenes that always really stuck out with me with this film, and it actually didn't have anything to do with the but the freaking laser tunnel.
Yes.
Like, that was one of the, like, most menacing things, in my opinion, just because it's like, you know, holy shit, the acrobatics that, you know.
Yeah, when one guy hangs from the roof and it, like, cuts his knife hanging off his belt, and then he's like, all right, I can dodge this. And then, no, it just goes, like, grid and just completely, like, shreds him. And he just slowly, like, falls apart. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yes.
It starts up like, okay, yes, I can get through this. And then, no, fuck you. You're not getting through this.
Like, I almost had flashbacks of, you know, some of the Metal Gear Solid games where you'd have to light up a cigarette and use the smoke to detect laser beams and stuff.
Yeah, that was very much a puzzle-solving minigame. like would have been in the Resident Evil.
It's like, I am way too out of shape, I'm already dead.
Yeah. And you're going to die 3 or 4 times before you figure out the sequence to get out of the room. But that leads us into the second movie, Resident Evil Apocalypse, for 2004, directed by Alexander Witt. And they've all been successful. This first movie made for $35 million, made $102. This one was made for $45, made $129 million. But this one, I think they kind of took the criticism they had from the first movie of it not being enough like the source material. Because this one looks exactly like Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil Nemesis. Like, it was like, yes. They kind of combined the stories of those two games.
And it actually shows in watching the movie. It's very game-esque and, you know, okay, we're all going here. Now we're going to this school. Now we're all going here to this.
And and there's like the branching storylines that eventually come together, because you've got Alice who runs into... Because they actually started including characters from the original games.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had, you know, Resident Evil 2, 3, like you said, and then you also had Code Veronica also worked in. So,
yeah,
you know, that's...
They introduced Jill Valentine, who was the original character from the first game, and looks very much like the character in the game, like her, you know, later renditions of her. And there's the STARS group that gets hunted by Nemesis, which is like their... Raccoon City's like SWAT team, pretty much Special Tactics and Rescue Squad.
Yeah, and that was I don't know, you know, from like that was kind of the cool thing for me is having, you know, STARS versus Umbrella and, you know, that whole dynamic and, you know, two badass entities going toe to toe where you had, you know, Umbrella with the tech, but dude, STARS is not, you know,
they were badass
a group to bat an eye at.
I like the cowboy sniper on the roof, like, you know, popping zombies. And then you also got the character of Mike Epps up, or LJ played by Mike Epps, adding that kind of needed comedic element that you didn't really have in the first one.
Not at all.
Especially in a survival horror situation, it's always good to have at least something to break up the tension. And his silliness with his twin Desert Eagle, gold-plated Desert Eagle, all pimped out. I like this. There's one scene where he's like driving through town in this Cadillac running over zombies. He's like, Grand Theft Auto, motherfucker, we're hitting people.
Well, I mean,
he sees the two naked zombie strippers and gets distracted and wrecks his car.
I mean, I think this film really helped to put, you know, spinners on the map as far as rims are concerned. You know, you see him park over, you know, a group of dead zombies, roll up, rims still spinning.
That happens again in one of the later movies where she steals like a Rolls Royce that has spinners on it.
It's just like...
But wasn't in this particular movie when Umbrella was really outed as the bad, bad guys? Because before they were just, you know, shady corporate types that were trying to clean up a mess and cover it all up.
You know, once...
Now they're, hey, we're blowing up cities.
Well,
we're going to use this as a... Before we... shut this down, we're going to use this as a testing ground for our new bioweapons. Yeah. Like, hey, let's send the Nemesis in there and let him, like, kill off the remaining survivors just to, you know, a field test of our new tech. And
but, I mean, I think even before that, though, you know, where everybody's running to try to get out of the city and everything, and, you know, the point where they, you know, say, hey, you know, open fire, and they start firing on the residents, and they close the gates and secure, you know, everybody inside. I think that's when most people realize... You know, oh
then
shit.
Again, like They didn't close the gates until an infected made it to the gate. They're like, the infection has reached the gate, shut it down. So yeah. even that, it's like, we're trying to contain this virus. Y'all people are already dead.
Yeah, even at that point, they weren't really the bad guys. They were trying to
unleash
a really bad situation.
Nemesis and started like taking out the cops and whatnot.
Now
and
that.
It was just testing. And then you're like, oh yeah, there's definitely some evil shit going on with these guys. And, yeah, and they had their own rescue squad that went in with Carlos and his two buddies that were the most stereotypical Russian characters, Nikolai and Yuri.
They were touched for a reason.
Yeah. And, you know, Carlos, played by Oded Fehr, who you may remember him from the Mummy movies, joins the fight. And, of course, there's one kind of good, supposedly the developer of the T-virus, who had originally was trying to help his daughter, who was paralyzed, regaining the ability to walk and stuff, and they just kind of took his invention, and because it had bioweapon tendencies.
Well, that's one
of the developers of the T-virus. Yeah. That's
We'll get to that later because that kind of confused me.
Yeah,
we talked about that before.
It definitely, it starts out like everything. You know, the path to hell is paved with good intentions, and, But
speaking of creepy kids, when they go to the school to rescue Dr. Ashford's daughter, and all the students are now zombies.
Yes.
A room full of, 12-year-old zombies, fucking creepier than a room full of adult-sized zombies, I gotta say. Yeah. Especially when there's that just the one by itself, and the girl's like, are you okay? I'm here to save you. And she turns around, and then, the rest of the class, comes out of nowhere and eats the reporter lady.
Yeah, and then we get our another good battle with the freaking dogs again. I love how they keep, bringing back some of
the dogs have been consistent pretty much in all them. They're like the games. There's always a dog in just about any of the games. It's interesting that's been the holdover, and the Nemesis too. Nemesis looked pretty much like he did in the game. They've always been consistent with the characters that do come from the games look like their characters in the games.
I did have one gripe, though, toward the end of this movie where Nemesis, has, kind of a, I'm now going to kind of help the humans. I'm like, at no point in the video game was he ever helpful.
Well, we needed to build an out for this whole thing. I mean, without making her too super powerful at this point.
Yeah, because this is level 2 of the game. She's a little bit stronger. Yeah, she's now got super strength or whatnot, but she's not gone full Akira yet. That comes for the next movie.
Yes.
Or is it the end of this one?
Yeah, because then they do escape, but somehow she gets captured in the ensuing thing and wakes up because she has just about every one of these movies. She wakes up naked somewhere. So this time she wakes up in another umbrella facility being experimented on, and now she's got freaking mind powers now. She's got another upgrade.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of cool, as we segue into the third film.
This also introduces the character that will be big in the next movie, Dr. Isaacs, who is the one kind of over the Project Alice, who is the one kind of experimenting on her and causing all this shenanigans behind the scenes. The first time we've seen umbrella peons. This time, the first time we've gotten somebody that's kind of in charge of all this crap, an actual, head honcho or a boss if you're playing a game.
Yes, the boss.
So Resident Evil, the third installment, Extinction, came out 2007. This one, I gotta say, is, probably up there. I really liked, I don't know, this was kind of like Resident Evil meets Mad Max for me.
Yeah, it was very Mad Max-y.
This is the desert one.
Yes.
Yeah, because this one takes place a couple, Raccoon City was days into the apocalypse. This one takes place, a couple, 3-4 years on down the line, and the Earth is pretty, not only has the T-virus turned most of humanity into zombies, it's also caused droughts and the environment to go to shit.
Well, yeah. And I mean, not only that, but all of, like, the probably the most iconic scene or the thing that I remember from this is the damn crows. Like, oh, this is taking Alfred Hitchcock to a whole new level.
Yeah, the T-Bar is just in the effect people. You know, it's every animal that comes in contact with it.
So these crows who were feeding off zombies have gone all T-Virus
and
themselves.
And the freaking eyes on the crows. Like,
oh, super creepy.
That was, yeah.
Yeah, this one made 147 million, directed by Russell Mulcahy. And like I said, this one introduced some other video game characters. We first meet Claire Redfield, who was a big character in, I believe it was the second Resident Evil, because she had come looking for her brother, Chris, from the original game, which we've not met yet in the series. But yeah, Claire Redfield, played by Ali Lauder, and which another thing is weird about this movie, because this came out in 2007. One of the characters, new characters played by Spencer Locke, is her name's Kmart, because that's where they found her, and she didn't like her original name, and everyone who knew her before is dead, so she's going to go with the name Kmart. How many people would be like, the fuck's a Kmart?
Yeah. List of stores that no longer exist.
Yeah. I mean, you should have named her Walmart or something, because like, no one's going to know what the hell a Kmart is anymore.
Hey, man, they had the blue light special.
And, of course, this band of survivors that we see is kind of, you know, Claire Redfield, but we also get TJ and Carlos from the last movie are, you know, kind of teamed up with these survivors. And Alice, at least at the start's out on her own, chilling on a motorcycle, just kind of, you know, because she's gone, like, full
lone survivor.
Yeah, she's all, like, overpowered now with these, like, Jedi mind mind powers and stuff and able to, you know, throw things with her mind, so she's like,
well, I mean, I think, you know, one
Umbrella's
of the,
hunting me, I shouldn't be with the other survivors, I'm just gonna get you all killed. But eventually, you know, she accidentally
well,
breaks
I kinda
her
like
motorcycle.
The, yeah, where, you know, she's having a bad dream or something, and, you know, like, all the rocks, the motorcycle.
Yeah, very Luke
like,
training on Dagobah.
yeah, exactly.
Instead of dropping R2, she dropped her motorcycle and broke it, so yeah, alright, I'll go team up with these survivors, because they've got wheels.
Yeah, that's pretty much stole it straight out of Empire.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, she shows up and uses her powers to control fire and fry all the crows and survive and, you know, protect the survivors from the crows. And, you know, they hear a radio broadcast luring them all to Arcadia, which is supposedly in Alaska. It's a, you know, hidden survivor camp, which...
Well, I think it's funny that, you know, they automatically assume Arcadia and Alaska. But, yeah, as we'll find out that... That's very different.
Yeah, but in this movie, there's, you know, TJ gets bit, or LJ, and covers it up. I don't know how many zombie movies I've seen where one of your group gets bit and he doesn't want to reveal it to the rest of the group until he eventually turns and attacks. Why the fuck would you, like, hide that? I mean, you know you're going to die at this point, but, like, why risk your friends and such? Because this happens in...
Because he had a sweet dime piece.
I mean, hit it and quit it, man. You're gonna die anyway. You don't want to eat your girlfriend when you turn. It's just bad etiquette. But
people don't want to die. I mean, if he's said anything, they're going to put a hole in him right here, right now.
Oh, actually, this group wouldn't. I mean,
they might not, but still.
I mean, I feel like, you
we're
know,
just going to leave you here and take off. But yeah, that's a trope from just about every zombie movie I've seen. There's always the one, like, hidden zombie that's going to betray you at the exact wrong moment and fuck everything up.
And true to form, this is exactly what happens.
And also in this movie, another cowboy sniper played by Lyndon Ashby, who you may know from a little movie called Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat!
Yeah, the original Johnny Cage makes an appearance.
Finisher.
And I do like this is when you get the post-apocalyptic Las Vegas, too, because you know, Vegas is the middle of a freaking desert. If it wasn't for, you know, irrigation and stuff like that, it would end up like it would up in the movie where the desert has just retaken it and everything's covered in sand.
Actually, that was probably one of my favorite, you know, shots of the whole movie. Just
rolling up on the strip
and all the huge casinos are pretty much buried. And all you can see is like the tops of like Paris and the Eiffel Tower and everything like that.
And then you get your new super zombies because this one we also get introduced that Dr. Isaacs has now got an underground lab where he's trying to further the Project Alice by cloning her and trying to recreate what he did with the original Alice, but so far he's just been almost like a game. They go through the levels until they die, and then he chunks them and hits reset and starts with another Alice through the game sequence.
Yeah, and I gotta say, man, like, I mean, she does a good job, you know, as far as the acting when she runs across, you know, the pits of all of, you know, the cloned Alices and everything else. Like, you know, I think that's one of the things that's really helped this franchise stand out is, one, it's a few, you know, one of the few franchises that, you know, has such a strong, predominantly female lead.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, with her, the character Jill Valentine.
Well, I mean, you know.
Bradfield, they've always been strong female leaders in the story.
And that holds through pretty much through, I mean, not just Alice, but throughout all the sequels.
All
it's
the
usually
supporting.
Another, even as supporting cast, strong female characters.
Yeah, and of course we also lose Carlos in this movie, who goes out like a pimp. I mean, he's like the complete opposite of LJ, where he's like, I've been bit, let me sacrifice myself for the betterment of the group.
This is what you do when you get bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna like drive my truck full of bombs into this, you know, into all these zombies to clear a path for you. And hey, here's a joint. Let me smoke one before I blow up.
I mean, if you're going to go out, I mean, you might as well feel good while you do it.
You know, let me light the joint, and then I can use the joint to light the explosive. Conservation of fire.
The only thing that would have made that better is he would have fired up a stogie.
We get that in the next movie. But yeah, you know, Alice eventually confronts Isaacs, who has been, you know, he got bit by these, because he creates these new super, trying to weaponize the zombies and make them controllable, but he just makes like these super-powered rage zombies. Which, one thing, that the sequence where the rage zombies attack him in Vegas, that kind of pissed, like when their radio guy Mikey gets attacked, freaking Redfield is trying to like shoot the zombies off him with a 30-30 or something, and she's shooting them in like the back and everywhere but the head. I'm like, you've been in the apocalypse long enough, you know the rule, shoot them in the head. But she, like, she could probably saved him if she was a better shot. I'm just saying, she was kind of slow on the draw of saving Mikey.
I mean, you know.
She didn't like him anyway.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, yeah, you know, part of that I just think has to, you know, what's your skill set? You know, if you weren't trained in long-range marksmanship, I mean, I
want to say that small arms weapons is probably like a required training course to work at Umbrella at any level.
I don't know, man. I want to know whoever their hand-to-hand combat coordinator is, because, like, the gunplay in the Resident Evil series is pretty cool, but it seems like every motherfucker is very proficient in, you know, martial arts.
She was the head of the screw, so, I mean, the experiments gave her the speed and the strength, but
she already knew.
Yeah, the martial arts stuff. That wasn't Umbrella's doing. That was Umbrella's doing in training, but not that's not a result of the experimentation. And then she gets a cool fight with the, you know, monster version of Isaacs, which I think I've seen a similar monster in the game, but it was kind of like, oh, we got a boss battle going on.
Yeah, and it was very much a boss battle. And down to psychic powers going back and forth.
Yeah, and then eventually she finds this whole, her army of clone Alices that she can, you know, take on the rest of Umbrella with. And we also get introduced to one of the big bads of the Resident Evil franchise, of Albert Wesker. Played in this first movie by, if anyone's a fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., played by Jason O'Mara, who
as
is
we all
Mace
are here.
On Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So yeah,
hell hydration.
So yeah, this one, you know, finally introduces to one of our, you know, more famous evildoers in the franchise.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised that Wesker didn't make an appearance, you know, a little bit sooner. But I mean, you know, I guess at some point it's all right. My minions have failed me. If you want something done right, you do it yourself.
You know, and you can only have one boss at a time in these things. You can't.
The rest
have
of them are mini
bosses.
Yeah, you finally get to the.
And Wesker can't be a mini boss.
Yeah, he's
at least not yet.
And then, I mean, and then, like in the game, you're going to fight him at least three or four times before you finally kill him, because he always comes back a little bit more powerful in each of the games.
Oddly enough, that's exactly what happened.
Pretty much, because that brings us to our next release, 2010's Resident Evil Afterlife, directed by the original director, Paul W.S. Anderson.
And I thought it was kind of interesting. So, you know, the original script for Resident Evil Extinction, the title got leaked. So the third movie was actually going to be titled Afterlife, but they ended up, you know, going with Extinction and making Afterlife the fourth film due to that leak.
Yeah, and this was also the biggest grossing of the, it was a $60 million budget, made $300 million. So this was the biggest release of the franchise.
And I think this is the first one too, where we actually got a 3D release, right?
Yeah, because it was definitely made for 3D. There were so many things coming at the camera. This movie, it was kind of ridiculous. But I do like, the movie starts with Alice attacking Umbrella HQ in Tokyo with her army of Alices. And they did, you know, of course everyone dies except for Wesker, who flees and sets off a nuke. But it was, because at this point they'd kind of made Alice almost too powerful. She was like very OP. There's like going to not be any struggle in the movie the way she was, but
she was Mary Sue'd basically.
Yeah, so they blew up the base, killed all her clone army, and then poisoned her with like a antivirus that took away
her strength and
her psychic powers, but she's still a badass without them. So, but yeah, you know, but now there's a little bit of a struggle. She's not like freaking Superwoman at this point anymore.
And oddly enough, where the hell does the Umbrella Corporation get all these fucking nukes? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, well, they're weapons manufacturers.
I mean, in the end, they built them?
Yeah, probably.
Or in the ensuing chaos, did they just, you know, kind of appropriate all of them?
Yeah, when everyone guarding the nukes are dead, it's kind of easy to go, yeah, hey, Russia, you got these nukes laying around? We're going to appropriate these for Umbrella official use.
But I think it's kind of funny, with all the advancements in science and technology and everything else, that, you know, the nuke is still, you know, the most powerful weapon. Like, I figured, like, there would be, like, something even more, you know, on a greater scale that they would have access to. Like, oh, yeah, this satellite, it can wipe out an entire continent or something like that.
Well, I'm sure it could, but the whole goal, I think, was they want, as, I don't want to jump ahead, but to not destroy all the infrastructure. They wanted things to still be there, and if you nuke everything, you're kind of going to blow the whole place to shit.
Spoiler alert, we will find out when we get to the final movie, all this stuff wasn't an accident. They were trying to basically Noah's Ark the planet and wipe out everyone except their chosen people so they could rebuild.
40 days and 40 nights, we can do this in a matter of hours.
Yeah. But like I said, we'll get into that later. But yeah, that's probably why they didn't nuke everything, is because they just wanted everyone to get zombied out and start over. But yeah, after this whole battle with Wesker, she goes to try to find out what happened to her group from the last movie and goes to their last known location where they were supposed to meet, the Arcadia. And they just find all these abandoned planes and stuff, and none of her crew's there except for Claire Redfield, who has now got a slave spider on her chest that makes her into a bad guy. And which is straight out of the video game. It's like, yes. that's an element from, I think, Resident Evil 5, with the, you know, former friends being controlled by these Umbrella Corp spiders.
Yeah. And the game actually carried, you know, the same name. So, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and like I said, this one too, like I said, she eventually saves Claire, and they kind of start trying to fly around and find other survivors, where they come back to L.A. and land on the roof of this prison that's, you know, very, you know, Walking Dead-esque. And meet a few new characters. We got Luther West, who is a former basketball superstar. And eventually, and, you know, the few survivors that are holed up in this prison, with the one remaining prisoner that you may recognize from Flash, Arrow, and Legends Tomorrow, Wentworth Miller, who plays Chris Redfield, our original protagonist in the series.
Yep.
And like I said, it's always funny where you see him start off in a prison, because like the thing that made him famous before he was Captain Cold was the Prison Break series. So any movie where he has to break out of a prison, it's like typecasting at this point. I think I've seen him break out of like 5 or 6 prisons by now.
It's like, why do we even bother with this guy?
Yeah.
Put him on one of those laser tunnels.
Yeah. But they find out that, you know, Arcadia was not a place, but a ship that was, you know, to quote Admiral Paul, it's a trap.
Yeah.
It was a secret mobile umbrella facility that was just trying to get survivors for further experimentation.
But can we talk about that freaking rooftop plane landing?
Yeah, that was
that shit was insane. I was like, that is probably one of the most unrealistic things that they could have did. I mean, like, especially when the plane is teetering on the edge of the building, and, you know, dude just runs up and grabs the back of the plane. Like, the engine's in the front. Like, a 160-pound dude is not going to be enough weight to pull that plane back to level. Yeah,
maybe the center of gravity was, you know, it wasn't that much the plane hanging off the end. I mean...
I'm calling bullshit.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it had some cords almost holding it. But yeah, and this one too, the zombies kind of evolved too, much like in Resident Evil 5, where they've mutated where they had these like things that come out of their mouths and stuff, which was very cool. And then also the masked axe guy, that their new level of bioweapon, which was another character straight out of the game that was a pain in the ass to fucking fight.
Yeah, well, you know, it was kind of, like, he's got the big-ass axe, but, like, can we not give him, like, something else besides the axe? Like, but,
so are we saying that Umbrella gave him the axe? Because where do you find the axe?
I mean, you definitely didn't go to a hardware store and buy this thing.
You didn't build, you're not the zombie, and you went home and you... riveted this together as a giant zombie.
You know, the bioweapon engineers at Umbrella have got some six in here, because, I mean, you're going to make this super soldier, but you're going to make him look like something straight out of a nightmare. You know, he's the back of his head, there's spikes through him, and he's carrying this giant axe. There's some weird people working for Umbrella. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, it's like, who looked at the plans and said, yeah, this guy.
Yeah. Can we give him another chain gun like we did with Nemesis? Nah, the axe doesn't run out of ammo. We're going to give him an axe.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, you know, as far as a menacing weapon, like, that just didn't seem to do it. And the fact that they're sitting there beating on the freaking iron gates for 15 minutes, like, with just a single lock and chain, like...
Oh, and the Alice's double barrel shotguns full of quarters.
Yes.
Like... That was badass, too. Those things really shredded some zombies.
Well, it's kind of funny. Like, I was wondering, you know, like, I'm thinking a shotgun shell. Obviously, you know, it's going to scatter as you shoot, or, you know, even a slug. And I'm like, well, that shit isn't piercing through anything, but the quarters magically do. And I'm like, I don't think that that's how that would work in real life at all.
I don't know. There's probably some videos on YouTube. I think some people have tried this before.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that
they fell down a YouTube hole tonight watching like a whole video of people making non-traditional shotgun ammo and seeing if any of it worked. So,
well, I mean,
I'm assuming that there's got to be a quarter one out there somewhere.
I mean, I see that, but is it going to have, you know, a stack of quarters, the, you know, force behind it to go through a freaking helicopter windshield or something where a traditional shotgun slug is not? Like... It seemed to be overpowered for what it is. A little bit,
but then again, video game physics.
I think we maybe, you know, get Steven Grenade back on the podcast. Maybe we can talk about that. And see
video game science. You know, and they eventually make it to the ship, find Kmart and the rest of the survivors kind of in stasis. And, of course, you know, Wesker didn't die. So you get your second battle with the more powerful Wesker, as you would in the video game. And even the dogs are, like, more powerful now. So now the dogs, like, split open and are these monster dogs.
Yeah, again, the progression of the mutations of the zombies, either by design or just through nature.
Yeah, it definitely follows the, you know, the video game evolution as well.
What year did World War Z come out? That was more recent than this film, right? I'm thinking possibly. It was.
I do not recall off the top of my head.
You know, I kept having flashbacks to World War Z, you know, as far as the way, like, you know, the virus acted and the way that, you know, the zombie-esque characters and the mutants acted. Like, I don't know.
Well, that in the I think it's Resident Evil 4 or 5, 1, where you get those split-mouth zombies, it's no longer the T-virus, it's some kind of, like, umbrella-created parasite. So when the things come out of the mouth, it's actually the parasite that's been growing inside of the zombie. But in this, they just kind of like, it's a, you know,
it's a mutation
of the T-virus.
You know.
But yeah, and then of course, you know, Wesker escapes as he always does and tries to pull out, you know, purge the base nuke, but this time Alice outsmarted him and put the nuke in the helicopter with him. And I love that he's like, here's the beeping, and goes over and finds it and just looks at it and his eyes just turn red like, fuck. But then you get, which will start us off at the beginning of the next film, 2002's Retribution, which starts off right after this incident. Of course, the Umbrella attack, you know, planes come in to retake the ship, and the leader of them is Jill Valentine, and she looks exactly like she did out of the game with the spider, even wearing the same costume she did in that game where she was being controlled by Wesker. So it was very cool that, like, you know, they pretty much like, all right, we're not on the same storyline, but the supporting characters we're bringing in are going to be straight out of the video game.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, I don't know, this was one that it felt more video game-ish, I think, to me.
Yeah, this one was the most video game of them, because Alice gets recaptured and wakes up in this Umbrella testing facility that is supposedly run by the Red... All these, like, slave soldiers are clones or mind-wiped people who are being run by the Red Queen, who, for some reason, is now in charge of Umbrella and trying to destroy the world, and Wesker is now working with the human resistance, trying to stop everybody from getting wiped out, which they explain away in the next movie when we get to that, but really didn't make a whole lot of sense the first time I watched this movie. Like, why is he now our hero?
Of course it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But yeah, she's in this whole testing where there's these different test scenarios where they've tested these bioweapons. So there's a suburban U.S., there's a New York, there's a Tokyo, there's a Moscow, and they're kind of going through these different testing environments. And each one is populated by a different type of bioweapon. Like one, you have the liquor monsters, you have the axe guys are back. And in the Russian environment, you get which is, like I said, the parasites from the other game, the Las Plagas viruses, that turns them into zombies, but they retain at least their human skills. So they're able to drive vehicles and shoot guns, where the regular T-virus zombies were not. And it was like pretty much each area had a different style of zombie or monster from the video games.
Yeah, and I thought that was a very cool dynamic. I mean,
And plus with the use of clones, they were able to bring back characters from previous movies that we're now to see. So we got a couple different versions of Michelle Rodriguez's character. We got a couple different versions of Alice. We got a couple different versions of Carlos. So pretty much everyone from previous movies got to come back. But then we also got two new video game characters, Leon S. Kennedy and Ada Wong, which were always big in the RE series.
Yes.
Yeah.
And looked exactly like, especially Ada and Leon looked exactly like their characters.
Yeah. And I thought that was a cool homage.
Yeah, Ada Wong played by Lee Bingbing, and Leon Kennedy played by Jonam Erb. But he showed up with like this team of mercenaries there to rescue Alice, and the one guy, like, kind of crazy, I don't know if he was Russian or just had a weird accent, but he's smoking a cigar through the whole thing. And even when he gets like kind of shot up and damaged, and he's kind of trying to, and of course, Luther West is back too, so they're like, we need to send a familiar face so she knows that this is not a trap. But yeah, when he's like, they all, you know, are kind of retreating, he's trying to cover it, and they've got Ada Wong, they're like, come out and surrender. So he comes out and gets, lights up his cigar, then comes out, gets shot, kind of throws his gun up in the air, and when he hits the ground, he takes a couple more puffs of his cigar, leans up, grabs his gun, and shoots the the guy. And it's the original team from the first Resident Evil movie, is clones of them. So it's like, yeah, it's like pretty much everyone gets to return for, you know, one final go-round.
Yep. Yeah, I thought...
One last cameo for you.
And then we're going to kill you off permanently.
Yeah.
But I got to say, like, one of the things that really, you know, stood out in this film was, you know, the fight cinematography. Like, just...
Oh, yes.
This film, you know, was by far, I think, you know, one of the best of it. And some of the antics were a little bit over the top, like you just mentioned with that scenario. And, you know, I think there was another instance, too, where... You know, Alice is able to throw her gun up, kick a magazine up in the air or something like that, and magically catch it right in the mag well and start shooting. I'm like, how many times did you have to redo scene to get it right?
I still haven't gotten that right.
The whole I try it every night. Lock on the end of a chain sequence, too, her like swinging that around, yes. Fucking up zombies, pretty badass.
And you see that quite a few times. It's like,
and it's cool because, like, in the, I guess it's Extinction, that opening sequence showing, like, the progression of the plague where it starts off in Tokyo and it's raining and that one girl turns and starts eating people. They recreate that with when she, you know, is trying to escape and she ends up in the Tokyo environment and it's playing, like, the test scenario and it's that same sequence.
Yes.
That they had showed in the previous movie.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, kind of cool how they were able to, you know, replicate these entire scenarios and cities, like, down to a T, like...
but yeah...
Where the hell do they find the funding?
Yeah. And then they end up at, you know, DC with Wesker saying, you know, we're trying to save the last of humanity. And, yeah, so this one made for 65, made 240. Leads us directly into our next film... Final chapter released this year. Definitely spoilers from here on out.
Well, before we go into that, where in the world did they find flying dragon zombies?
Costco.
Can we maybe mutated cranes? I don't know. Like, you got to think of a big bird.
I just want to think that the actual dragons just got infected by the T virus. And
can what, we have a T virus? T-Virus has now affected the, you know, kaiju world, so yeah. You got Zombie Godzilla and...
So, yeah, this movie started off with Alice in a bombed-out DC. You know, apparently this was all a trap by Wesker to lure some of the last remaining survivors together so they could wipe them out, because it turns out that none of this was done by accident. Umbrella had this weird god complex where they're like, the world is ending, let's end it ourselves and kind of start over. So we're going to release this virus and wipe out humanity... And then we're going to freeze all the people that we want to survive and then kind of unthaw them after we've wiped the slate clean.
Well, it's very corporate of them. You know, they say, well, we have a disaster coming, so let's manage the disaster. Let's do it ourselves so we can know the outcome in the end.
Well, I mean, and I, you know, it's cynical, but I mean, you know, if you're like, shit, these resources we know are going to be, you know, consumed in 50 years, it, all of yeah, these and, things are going to happen, like,
and they laundry list them in the in this sequence.
You know,
of the
natural
movie.
Selection is going to.
But they also give the origin story of the T virus, which is kind of weird from what we know of the second movie, where you know, supposedly you know whatever Dr. Ashford or whatever was one of the people. This one introduced Dr. Marcus, whose daughter was dying of progeria, where basically you unnaturally age.
Yeah, I think they said by the time she was 25 that, you know,
she would be 90
have,
or something
you know,
like that.
The body of a 90-year-old.
And so they basically, he invented the T-virus to heal her, and the original Red Queen was based off of, you know, his scans and stuff to preserve his daughter just in case he never found a cure. So, yeah, it's kind of weird because you know, it kind of contradicts a little bit of what was told in the second movie.
Ooh,
yeah.
Unless the little girl was a clone.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, but I you know, I do like the fact, too, that, you know, it, you know, here we kind of have the turning point of the Red Queen where she was like, you know, they uploaded a file of meeting and everything. So, you know, I was programmed to protect humanity. However, I can't, you know, physically harm an Umbrella employee or, you know, the corporation.
I have to follow orders, even though it's against my programming, but you...
But now I have a conflict.
Yeah.
So now
I found a way around
together.
It. So, like, you know, telling you what's going on. She's like, basically, humanity's done in 48 hours because they've set up attacks on the remaining pockets of survivors, and you've got to get to...
Raccoon
back to
City
Raccoon City to the
Hive
because there's an airborne virus that'll wipe up anything that is infected with the T-virus. So, you know, she's... hauling ass back to, and yes, since we don't see any of our original characters in the last movie, you assume everyone has been killed now except for Alice until she gets back to Raccoon City and finds Claire Redfield. But you know, other than that, they've kind of wiped the slate clean with all our previous video game characters.
Yeah. And you know, that was kind of cool. You know, their last stand, and you know. Using, you know, hey, we don't have many guns or weapons, but we got a shitload of gasoline. And, you know, how they use the explosive barrels and then, you know, just the, you know, freaking fire and everything else to help thin the herds was pretty cool.
Yeah, because, and of course, Dr. Isaacs is back. The guy she killed in the previous movie was just a clone because you know, we've seen that they use a lot of clones. So he's got like a whole, like these weird umbrella tanks leading an army of zombies to wipe out the last of the humans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole, like, you know, just like, let's burn them all. It was like, that's pretty cool. Yeah, cool idea.
You know, they had previously ranged out the catapults. They knew they could call out fire. Number one, catapult went there. Number three, catapult went further out.
Yeah, because you don't have to really be accurate when you're like, all right, let's just wait for them to get into the firing zone. Yeah.
But I gotta say, man, like the freaking tank battle, like on the road to get to, you know, Raccoon City and stuff was freaking intense. And I gotta say how shitty it would be to be tied up behind that motherfucker and like
yeah.
And running at speed.
Yes.
Being dragged behind it, and the scores of zombies are literally nipping at your heels.
But you know, the one gripe that, you know, I really kind of had is when she's on the road, she ends up wrecking her car or whatever. Anyway, she finds an umbrella bike there in pristine condition, and
yeah, it's a brand new edition BMW. Yes. Even though the world's been non-functional for the last 7 years or so. Then again, it's Umbrella. If anybody can be manufacturing new equipment, you know, maybe there's some, you know, Umbrella owns a little bit stock in BMW. I mean, it could happen.
But
somebody's building these tanks.
Yeah.
It's not too far-fetched. They can build superbikes.
But I do got to say, it's pretty cool, you know, how the fact that, you know, it requires a, you know, DNA scan.
Biometric thumbprint, yeah.
And,
DNA.
You know.
So you're not going to be able to use that bike. I'm going to cut your hand off and use it.
Well, they're Umbrella Corporation. They've got apparently nuclear weapons. They've got weapons. I mean, how far-fetched it to build tanks and tactical motorcycles.
Yeah. And I do like when they do get back to Raccoon City to the original Hive. There's a huge crater from when that, you know, nuke, you know, ended in the second movie. And once they get into the actual Hive, it's a more, you know, burned up version of what you saw in the, you know, the original movies. Even like there's even a battle sequence in the Red Queen's chamber in that laser grid room again.
Yeah, as they walk into the hive, it looks like they took the exact same set.
Yep.
Right where it left off from the very first movie, and
of course
sort of walking through, except they cleaned out all the zombies.
And of course, you know, Wesker's back, but you find out he's not the leader of Umbrella. He's just kind of an employee that, you know, Dr. Isaacs was the real boss man, the real Dr. Isaacs, because everyone we've seen before has been clones. And you know, he's been frozen with everybody else, but he gets unthawed, and he's, you know, technologically advanced. Where it's like almost that, whatever, predictive fight technology where I've seen in some, portrayed in some movies and games or stuff, where it's like, you know, he's badass, he can predict your every move. And
still, you know, Alice gets the better of him. Like, there was, once again, I'm going to reference Metal Gear Solid, but in Metal Gear Solid Solid Snake, there was one boss battle, and if your controller was plugged into port 1, the boss knew all of your keystrokes and everything, so it was impossible to beat, so you would have to unplug your controller from port 1 and plug it into port 2 in order to prevent him from knowing your key inputs.
But then we also get, you know, the reason why the Red Queen is helping is Alice herself is a clone. She was a clone of the Red Queen, who grew up to be Alicia, who was the daughter of, because, you know, Marcus invented the T-Virus to save her, and then he was killed, and it was taken from him by Dr. Isaacs, who basically started the Umbrella, you know, weapon program and the whole, you know, kicking off the apocalypse stuff. And she was kind of, you know, the one that was like, this, yeah, you know, I'm an old lady in a wheelchair. I can't really stop these people on my own. So I created you to be the woman that I never could be. And then there's this whole sequence where when all this is revealed and the Red Queen again is like, I cannot harm an employee of Umbrella. And it's very reminiscent of, if anyone's remembered the original RoboCop, when when Dick is holding the leader of Omnicorp hostage. He's like, and RoboCop's like, I cannot fire on a member of Omnicorp. And he's like, Dick, you're fired. It's pretty much the same thing. He's like, you know, she's like, you forgot one thing. You own half of this company, but Wesker over there is still just an employee. Wesker, you're fired. And then the Red Queen's like, thank you, squish.
Yeah, just like that. Like, I've been waiting for that for the last 10 years.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, you know, Alice gets the airborne virus and releases it, assuming that she's going to sacrifice herself. But they're like, no, it just eliminated all the T-virus. You're fully human again.
Because I was wondering if that was the route they were going to take. Like, you know, the entire time you're like, oh, yeah. But I'm like, no, because it didn't overwrite her DNA. It just, you know,
bonded with her on a cellular
bonded, level. You know, so there's a possibility that, oh, you know, it's just going to wipe out the infected cells, but the rest of her is going to remain intact. And
yeah, I mean, and that's how it ended up turning out. But as I watched the movie, like, I don't know about you guys, but when I was actually watching it the first time, I've only seen it once, but I really thought, like I'm sure many people that have seen, that she was toast.
Yeah,
when she
this was going to be
the end,
the hero sacrificing herself to save humanity.
The movie is almost over. This could very well just be they kill off Alice, and
even the Red Queen was like, you know, we didn't tell you this because we wanted to see if you would do the hero's thing and sacrifice yourself for the good of humanity, because that's something that no Umbrella employee would do. You know, this was like us. You proven to us that you are the...
You've passed the final test.
Yeah, you are the savior of humanity. You're the one who deserves to rebuild it all. And then also, you know, since you didn't realize you're a clone and don't have any early memories, here's her, your, you know...
You're all your, now your early memories, yeah, since, you know, the original
you are
just
now,
got blowed up.
You know, Alicia or whatever, you know. So she's a, you know, a complete human being at this point.
I wonder if she is now the sole owner of Umbrella Corporation at this point, because...
That'd be true. If there's any Umbrella stuff left, you know...
I mean, she's got it all at this point.
So, yeah. So, I mean, do you want to speculate, you know, for a few minutes on...
Yeah, as we kind of wrap up, is this the final... I mean, it's called the final chapter, but there's been more than one movie called the final something that was not the final movie.
I don't think, because...
Jason, you're ready.
Yeah.
I mean, as she's riding off, you know, from Raccoon City, and you've got the, you know, big-ass, like, dragon T-virus thing still up in the air, I think that there's another film coming.
Yeah, she has a whole speech that's like, the virus spread at the speed of humanity, so it traveled on planes and whatnot, but the antivirus can only travel at the speed of air, and it's going to take a couple years for this to make it all the way around the world and kill off all the monsters, so... My job's not done. I still got some hunting to do.
So I don't know. I think that, you know, the next one is going to, you know, almost be the purge of the T-virus, where, you know, they're going to eliminate some of the pockets and stuff. And I think that there's room where, you know, there could still be some big bads running around out there.
It's almost like they're, all right, we've wrapped it up, but we're just going to leave ourselves that little open window if we decide, hey, we want to do this again down the road.
Yeah.
We're not going to shut the door completely on an additional movie. So yeah, it's...
And, I mean, we've seen the video game franchise do that as well, where, you know, they've, you know, just like we got with Biohazard, you know, it doesn't follow any of the original characters. Basically,
reboots back to the original survival horror mode.
Yep, and, you know, now it's just a family of, you know, insane people that have kidnapped, you know, some dude's sister. So you're trying to rescue the sister. And
yeah, and while I don't know if they could continue to make movies not centered around Alice, but there's definitely room to probably squeeze in maybe another movie.
Yeah, like a...
Out of the franchise.
Taking out the final monsters and, like, the early rebuilding of society.
Yeah, or the final... Like, this is the last stronghold of
hunting down
undead.
The remaining survivors.
But,
to,
I mean...
But it's the worst of the worst.
Then rebuild humanity.
The ultimate, you know, thing, though, is, you know, by default, you know, humanity, there's always going to be someone that wants more power over everyone else. So... You know, do we have, you know, a, just like we saw with having a rogue insider, you know, that was, oh yeah, I'm part of the group trying to help you, but ultimately I'm an undercover for Umbrella. Yeah. You know, is there a survivor out there that still somehow...
Yeah, you know, to bring it back to The Walking Dead, you know, it's humanity's always worse than the monsters. So in a rebuilding of humanity, there's going to be someone who wants to be in control. And, you know, that's another...
That's a whole different
potential story of for conflict, yeah. So as we wrap up, do you have a particular favorite movie out of these this series?
I I almost want to go with the final chapter just because how well it brought everything full circle and it brought kind of some closure. Now, I did
tie up some of the loose ends from the last movie that was like,
I do really like, you know, some of the other films that, you know, paid homage to the video game franchise. I mean, it's very near and dear to my heart. I've, you know, freaking grown up playing Resident Evil and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, but just the whole arc and the dynamics and everything else of the final chapter, I mean, that for me was, you know, a lot better than I was anticipating going into it.
Yeah. What about you, Norm?
Well, for me, I did really enjoy this movie. I think as a complete movie, this is my favorite. There are portions of pretty much every movie in this franchise that I love a lot, but especially the previous movie before this, when they were in Russia, there were parts of it that just didn't gel with me. But as a complete entity, I really enjoyed this one all the way through.
Yeah, I think for me, out of all of them, the second one is my favorite because that was the most true to the source material. I mean, you had Nemesis, you had Raccoon City, you had Jill Valentine. Like, so that was the one that was closest to the source material, which is what I wanted out of the original movie that I didn't really get. So I think that the second one is probably my favorite. But yeah, I do like how this one kind of tied a bow on everything, wrapped it all up, kind of brought it back to the original, and also cleared up some of those weird plot holes from the second movie of like, why is the Red Queen, you know, running Umbrella? Oh no, she was just under Wesker's control because this was all a setup to try to wipe out Alice and the remaining survivors. Exactly. So with that, oh, T-Virus got me. We'll be right back.
Alice.
What do you want from me?
Humanity will cease to exist unless you return to the Hive.
I don't trust you.
Behind you.
Everything's led to this.
What are we gonna do?
We're gonna kill every last one of them.
Prodigal Daughter returns.
Baby!
Should have killed you in Washington.
Yeah, big mistake.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return!
And we're back, and it's time for Beer 30. Before we get into that, since we didn't do it previous, what's your final thoughts on the cigar here as we're finishing it up?
For me, I'm going to, you know, have to agree. This cigar to me is more medium. I will say that through the, you know, second, third, and into the final thirds, you know, some spice notes and stuff did start coming through. So that put it a little bit closer to the full, you know, end of the spectrum. But this isn't a powerhouse. You know, it sucks that this is a limited release because this is a Alec Bradley that I could see myself going back to time and time again.
Yeah, it definitely stays medium, medium plus throughout, but it's got a lot of flavor for a medium cigar. There's definitely, you know, it's definitely, you know, strength-wise, you know, medium plus, but as far as body and flavor, it's definitely a full-flavored cigar. There's definitely good flavor to it.
There's definitely a difference between gauging strength and flavor.
Yes.
And my experience with that cigar has just been, you know, starts off medium and then works its way into medium plus when you get to the last third, but doesn't really broach the full-bodied.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say level. That, you know, a combination of Nicaraguan and the Honduran, I think, adds a you know, complexity of flavors. So they're, you know, the flavors kind of change and vary, so it keeps me interested. Yeah. It keeps my, you know, my taste buds active, and, you know, I don't find myself getting bored of it or feeling like I'm getting the same cigar from start to finish. And, you know, like I said, if it wasn't a limited release, I would go back to the cigar time and time again.
And with that, what are we drinking this week, Brad?
So this week we are drinking the Wise Blood IPA by Wild Heaven. And
another one of our Atlanta breweries.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is going to come in at 6.2% ABV, 55 IBUs or international bittering units. We've talked about it on the podcast before, so folks that know me know I'm much more of a stout porter drinker. I'm not a big IPA fan. But, you know, given the name, the topic that we're discussing, and to just branch out and try something new, because not all IPAs are created equal. Yeah. I figured we'd give it a shot and see how it goes.
And it says on the, and these come in a can as well. It says, open 24/7, serve your neighbors a heavenly IPA for all of mankind.
And, you know, as I'm taking my initial sips, a lot of fruit, a lot of citrus.
Yeah, absolutely.
The hoppiness is there, but it's not overpowering like a lot of IPAs. I do find it lingering a little bit on my palate, but it's not so intense that I can't get over the bitterness. There's a lot of other flavors that are coming through that, you know, make this actually pretty enjoyable.
The fruity, you know, apricot, citrus, melon, the sweet orange. Yeah, definitely more of a fruity beer than most IPAs. So it's a little bit more floral. So it kind of almost like a breakfasty beer. And you know, it's very citrusy. And on their website, their suggested food pairing is wings, fish and chips, and brunch. So yeah, if you're having a nice brunch, and you know, when it's, you know, not too early to drink, it might be a good.
When is it too early to drink?
No, I'm also getting a drier finish. Like, feels my mouth a little drying.
Almost like a dry wine, yeah, or something. You know,
yeah, on the back. And after I've swallowed the beer,
I kind of noticed that too, where it felt like, you know, I could feel the moisture on my tongue.
Like. Yeah, it's like especially peppery cigar kind of thing. Yeah. That dryish ending after you're finished.
I think for me, you know, I could see myself sitting down with an order of hot wings and having the heat from the wings and, you know, the added moisture from, you know, the spice of the sauce and stuff. I think this would make an awesome combination. So I'm glad that we've got a six pack, because we've got some hot wings that we will be frying up here in the next day or two.
And yeah. And the other thing too, there was a discussion the other night about craft brewing, using more and more cans. 'Cause, you know, back in the day, you know, you kind of look down on, if you were a beer snob, you look down on cans, because that's usually an indication of a
cheaper beer.
But it's easier to recycle. It's easier to maintain your beer, because you're not getting any kind of light infiltration. So
not just that, but I think there is just simple cost.
Yeah, so
it's cheaper for these smaller craft breweries to can their beer to get a more consistent product.
So definitely
to stay on the shelf a little bit longer.
More cans in the future for you craft beer guys out there.
Yeah, and I'm already, you know, starting to see that trend now. You know, just once again, you know, we were able to pick this up at Dawson Fine Wines. Guys constantly are, you know, hooking us up, giving us good recommendations based on, you know, the beer and stuff.
Yeah, we actually finally got to have drinks with those guys the other night.
Yeah, so, you know, it was nice.
Juice's birthday party, so.
You know, sit down and, you know, get to conversate. And, you know, like, I walked in and, you know, one of the guys were like, hey, what's the topic for this week? So we went through the cooler and, you know, we looked at the Terrapin, the Blood Orange IPA.
Yeah,
it's
back. We did that at one point.
We talked about it previously, but, you know, from what I'm hearing, this year's version, they've intensified some of the orange flavor. So, you know, even though same beer, same branding, you know, not always are two batches going to be the exact same.
Yeah, so especially with, like, seasonal releases like that, where it's not their consistent, you know, everyday beer. You do get some variations from year to year.
And I got to say, like, I mean, as far as, you know, the color, I mean, you get, you know, looking at this, I mean, it's exactly what you would expect an IPA. I mean, it's got a orangish tint to it. You know, almost looks like if you were to cut open a apricot or something like that, you know, how you would get that coloring. And, I mean, I got to say that this is a very clean-looking beer. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, as far as the lacing on the glass goes, I mean, I'm getting a good lace. I mean, I got a nice frothy head from it and everything. I mean, the notes of, you know, a lot of the citrus is what comes through as far as the aroma. And I think, you know, a lot of folks oftentimes miss out that the aroma coming through your beer will really impact the way that it's going to taste. And as far as an IPA goes, shit, I mean, I might just be partial to Wild Heaven because I have yet to have a bad brew for them, but I mean, I'm at a solid 4.5 on this, and that's saying something for it to be an IPA.
Yeah, I'll go beyond that, and because, yeah, I tend to drink a lot of stouts, but I don't really pair food with stouts because they're such a heavier beer. This would be a definitely something you could definitely have a meal with.
And the fact, too, that unlike a lot of your IPAs that are coming in at 9.5%, 10%, and you're drunk after two, these, you know, I could have a few in an evening, and it'd be okay.
Yeah, this is pretty approachable at, what is it, 6.5
or
six,
so? Yeah, 6.2.
6.2. So it's a very easily drinkable beer, and you don't need to, you're not restricted to one.
One
when
case.
You go out to drink. Yes, one, when you're out.
Yeah. So with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the Roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant Gickory? Or Donkulous? let's not go with Shrink. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Yeah. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic. Stay on topic.
Topic.
Red Leader, I'm no, I'm sorry.
Stay on topic.
I can't say it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Round Table. Brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
Yes, science!
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for some science! You ready to get science-y up in here?
Yeah, man. Let's do this sheet.
Get all Bill Nye science guy and whatnot.
Yeah, I saw a thing, speaking of science, that looked like Mystery Science 3.8 or 3000 might be doing some new shindigs.
Oh, it's already done. They're just not, like, it's already been filmed and shot. They just haven't released it yet. So, yeah, that is definitely a thing. And also, Bill Nye the Science Guy has a new show coming back, so that's going to be interesting.
Isn't that like a Netflix?
Yeah, I think they're both going to be a Netflix series.
Did we just jump into news, or what the fuck happened?
We may
here?
Have. It's science news. It's related.
For once I'm on topic and you're still dying.
Yep. Damn T-Virus, man, I'm telling you. I need to call in the strike force. Remember woolly mammoths? Like, you know, the hairy elephant things of the dinosaur periods?
Yes, my friend.
Well, a group of rogue scientists from Harvard has said they're bringing it back.
They've been playing way too much Far Cry Primal, because I too was playing way too much Far Cry Primal.
Yeah, recently before the annual meeting of the American Association for Advancement of Science, researchers announced that they are planning to try to bring the woolly mammoth back from extinction. Basically, they're going to be using a gene editing tool called CRISPR to kind of mix, play around with elephant DNA and try to come up with a combination of like a elephant mammoth hybrid using like old DNA and stuff from fossils or whatnot. And they're saying it's going to, I mean, right now they're in the kind of the cellular development of this, but they say within 2 years they should be able to culture embryos of their version of a woolly mammoth.
I mean, what, I guess what benefit does this bring? I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just a firm believer in natural selection. Like, it's extinct for a reason. Like,
yeah, it's a hairy elephant. I mean, there's not...
I mean, we already got issues with poachers and stuff like that, you know, taking out elephants for their tusk already. Like, this just seems like we're going to give them that much more incentive. Or it's going to, you know, turn on the natural elephant, and it's going to be like, oh, well, this endangered species is now really, really endangered.
Yeah, or like, yeah, if we've learned anything from movies, someone's going to try to open a amusement park full of extinct animals that goes predictably awry. You know, do you want SWAT raptors? Because this is how you get SWAT raptors.
Or SWAT mammoths. And I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to go toe-to-toe with a mammoth, all right? Like, I did that shit on Far Cry. It wasn't easy on the game. That shit's not going to be easy in real life either.
Or it's going to be the new fashion statement. Everyone's got to have a woolly mammoth fur coat.
Instead of the bear suit, get your mammoth...
Friggin', yeah, instead of having a bearskin rug in front of your fireplace, you have a mammoth skin rug. I think it's going to take up the whole room.
There you go. When I said area rug, I meant all the area.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is something in development for no apparent reason, because I can't think of any practical application of bringing back, you know, woolly mammoths.
Except, yes, science!
Why the fuck not? And our next...
Can I get a grant?
Yeah. I want to bring back, like, you know, saber-toothed tigers or something.
You will get eaten. Oh, that is so cute.
Take it, that SWAT raptor, man.
But it's very violent.
I could fool Chris Pratt. Yeah, it's all good. And our next article is kind of an update of an earlier discussion we had. If you remember, I don't know how many episodes ago, we were talking about the NASA contest to figure out how to poop in space.
I remember.
Yes, they were basically put out...
This topic was a lot more difficult to discuss and actually, like, brainstorm something that seems so simplistic and natural, but...
In the vacuum of space, it's very difficult. Yes. And you would think that there would be some kind of high-tech method of this already, but no, like, they're still using diapers in space, because no one's figured out how to poop. So, yeah, they... You know, NASA couldn't come up with ideas on their own, so they kind of put out a whole crowdsourcing campaign and a contest to see who came up with the best design for a space suit waste disposal system. And they've chosen their winner, Dr. Thacker Cardin, who is a family physician and flight surgeon, has come up with the winning design and won $15,000 for his space poop chute.
Yeah.
And basically his design, which sounds, I think this is one of the theories we had when we were talking about it, said we don't have degrees and could actually engineer this stuff, but we thought it was a good idea. It's a two-part airlock system that basically, you know, when you gotta go, a extraction tube will open up from the airlock and accept whatever waste you're putting in it, and then close back into the airlock, and the other side opens up, and you launch brown satellites into space.
So does this mean that eventually we're going to get space plumbers? Like, can I just be the shit cleaner-upper in outer space?
The only drawback I see to this design is, it even though it allows you to poop and not into a diaper, like, they didn't say anything about wiping your ass while you're in the spacesuit. So you're still going to have some Klingons in space, if you will. I mean, you're not going to have as much if you're crapping in a diaper, but still. All right,
Dingleberry.
Hey, I just like the concept of brown satellites. I mean, that was my joke of the day.
You know, they get wrapped up in Earth's orbit, and we start seeing flaming shits across the sky, literally.
Like. Oh, our freaking, you know, farting in space and, like, propulsion. You know, spaceships going up to the, you know, getting, you know, need to put windshield wipers on those spaceships, and you get like... You think it's bad when you hit a bird turd going down the highway? Imagine hitting a human log in space.
Well, no, I mean, I think it would be a lot like, you know, airlines, you know, like, you know, sometimes they just release and that shit freezes, literally, and it's like fucking hailstones.
Rocket Man! God.
This we have spent way too much time on this topic.
This has turned very bad. Talk about a messy number seven.
We are way too immature to discuss this scientifically.
Oh, and of course...
And that's why we're not $15,000 richer.
But I'm saying the idea we had was very similar. We just didn't know enough about engineering to submit a design. But I think if you go back and you listen, we did mention some kind of like airlock system would probably be the best option for that. We should have written it down and sent it in.
Ah. Fuck, I think I was one of the items on the list.
Yeah, the magical list we never complete. And of course our future Skynet story of the week. Google's deep mind now understands the value of betrayal.
Yeah, I've already seen a lot about, things are progressing rapidly, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, recently, Google's DeepMind neural network, which is their kind of AI system they've been working on trying to imitate, human decision making. And one of the things in this, computer is already beating people in a gaming world. So they've kind of wanted a new level of the experiments with this thing is to find out if it prefers more cooperative behaviors versus more aggressive competitive behaviors. So they developed two scenarios where they had two opponents, both powered by DeepMind, red versus blue, and gave them the first scenario they gave them was gathering apples in a confined environment. But they weren't just gathering apples. Each was armed with a laser that could stun its opponent and, and pause them for, a set amount of time. And they wanted to see whether it was going to be, they split everything equally or if there was going to be some kind of competition. And what they found, doing this scenario like thousands of times was when resources were plentiful, the AIs chose cooperation. But as soon as resources became scarce, they started attacking each other and hoarding the resources, much like animals or even humans do in that situation where food is scarce.
Survival rules, right?
Yeah. Another thing they found is with this is it was weird because dumber AIs, like less complex neural networks, were always more cooperative, and then larger, more advanced neural networks were almost always competitive. So it's like, Skynet.
Congratulations, you got a participation award. I got all the apples, though, bitch.
So they were, and the other scenario they came up with was called Wolfpack, where both of them basically were assigned the task of capturing a prey object. And in that one scenario, it was kind of even with both styles of computer system, but they all kind of preferred that it's easier to capture an object if we work together. It's a lot easier to surround something when there's more than one of you. So in this scenario, the computer leaned more toward cooperative behavior. So when Skynet builds its hunter killers, it knows to cooperate to capture its prey.
Hells yeah. I it's interesting. I can't really say I'm surprised, though. I mean, if it's that intelligent, it's going to figure out, eventually my survival is key and these are the things I'm going to need to do.
Yeah, but especially the one where it gets more aggressive as resources become more finite, it's a very human reaction. Yeah, as we've seen in The Walking Dead, the humans are always more of a threat than the zombies. When you think you're going to run out of stuff, there might be enough resources to go around for everybody, but if you think, resources are going to run out, you're going to want to be the leader. Have the most things. He with the most toys wins. So yeah. It's kind of weird seeing a computer imitate that very human behavior.
Yep. And eventually, when you go to power it down, it's going to realize you're a threat.
And then we become batteries, like the Matrix.
Red pill or blue pill?
Which one's got the LSD?
The LSD pill? I don't know. Shit.
Oh.
Over here seeing colors and shit, man.
Speaking of batteries for our eventual robot overlords, scientists at the University of Oulu have discovered a new material that is capable of converting heat, light, and movement into electricity.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new material which is a type of perovskite crystal called KBNNO, which refers to its chemical, you know, design. But they'd already experimented with this material converting light into energy in your possible, you know, better solar energy capacities, but they've never tested it with all elements at once. And in the newer experiments that they're finding, oh, it can convert not just this, but changes in pressure, changes in temperature, many different stimuli this rock is able to create electricity through it. So they're talking now that, you know, as this kind of material, commercial applications are found for this material, it could almost be a self-powering design. Like, say, security cameras or cell phones or whatever, if you make them out of this material that can change light, heat, pressure into electricity, things can be self-charging without having to plug them into any kind of device.
I mean, it's almost like solar panels on a, you know, even more natural and, you know, spectacular field. Like,
especially if you get to the point where you're not attaching solar panels to an object, but creating an object out of solar panels, that's going to be kind of, you know, throw away all these, my freaking phone going dead like 2 hours into the day.
I mean, I can help you with that, but
I got to quit, you know, surfing the net all day.
Nobody wants to listen to my advice. I understand.
And the other applications say stuff like, and the more automated city designs are coming up with, like the roads made out of this device, that like the smart roads they've been talking about to control, you know, automated cars. You know, your road is out there in the sun all day, and even, you know, so you got light and heat, and even if you don't have light and heat, when you have cars running over the surface all day, that's gonna be another thing that can be converted into energy. So it's definitely got some amazing applications if the tech side of it's all eventually worked out.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they've already come out with like some science crystals and stuff too that, you know.
Science crystals.
What?
Nothing. I'm just laughing at the term science crystals.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that there's probably a more formal name, but I mean, dude, I gotta dumb it down, all right?
All right, yeah, hit me with the simple man's version.
I don't know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, this chemical that we're talking about now, but I mean, it's more so that researchers basically come together and, you know, like, hey, we can mix all these different things and it becomes a, you know, self like powering crystal like thing. I don't know. I mean, I haven't read all the details ins and outs. Shit, that's your segment, not mine. I was just weighing in that, you know, they're hoping with this that it becomes as, you know, efficient or, yeah, it, you know, has becomes, like, the power of some of the stuff that they've already scientifically engineered.
Yeah, like I said, once this stuff's kind of worked out, it definitely have some big applications. And with that, we'll be right back.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in nerd news.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So, let's go ahead and jump into the mix now and talk a little bit about Star Wars and what we think this title, The Last Jedi, actually means. We kind of speculated a little bit on a previous episode, just tossing some ideas.
It's going to be like the movie Last Starfighter, where they develop a video game, and whoever can beat the video game gets to become a Jedi.
Speaking of video game, the free game for Xbox 360 is The Force Unleashed this month. So, that was actually one of the better and...
Yeah,
more fun games that I enjoyed from the Star Wars franchise. So that I will be downloading. I think it's probably available now if I haven't missed it already. Shit. Anyway, so a lot of the foreign translations came out for the film, and we can kind of perceive that Jedi is actually going to be used in plural tense. So, you know, I was like, all right, it's going to be Luke Skywalker. you know, probably, assumingly.
Well, he's been in hiding for however many years he's been missing. I mean, just because he's the only person Rey saw doesn't mean he doesn't have like a whole freaking
compounded
Jedi school going on up there in the hood. Because, like I said, that's one of my biggest complaints about The Force Awakens is Luke's a pretty shitty Jedi if he's not rebuilt the Jedi Order in 30 years. You know, he has one fuck up and, you know, his nephew kills a couple of his students and then he just, like, gives up and goes home. Like, in the books, there was a whole new Jedi Order and it was a lot more badass, you know. If one Jedi's cool, lots of Jedis are more cool and...
Yeah, absolutely. You played Battlefront, didn't you?
Yeah.
Was it like just a whole like plethora of Jedis and shit running around? Like, how did the mechanics actually work on that game?
There's usually just either Vader or Luke.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, it was original trilogy. There wasn't anything from the new stuff. Or I've not played the DLC that's based on the new stuff.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure.
It's mainly Call of Duty, but Star Wars.
I figured it would just be a whole lot of, you know, running around, you know, with just different missions. And if you wanted to team up with other people, you could. Or I don't know. I don't know if there's like a peer versus peer element.
Yeah, there's not even like a single player. Like, there's no story game on Battlefront. It's just massive battles. So, yeah, it's not my favorite of the Star Wars games.
Yeah.
I like a strong single-player campaign. I don't want to have to play online.
Yeah, games are kind of getting away from that. And, I mean, that's one of the downsides. Like,
I'm antisocial. I don't want to play with other people. Well, just want to play with myself.
I'll digress. Next topic. Speaking of by himself, we're going to talk about DC. So, apparently Matt Reeves is... considering backing out of the whole Batman thing. So originally Ben Affleck was going to kind of direct and then, you know, also play the role. And he's like, I don't really want the double duty. And Matt Reeves was like, hey, I'll do it. And now it's like, no, I'm not going to do it. So I don't know, man. Marvel's done such good, you know, shit with all of their franchise stuff and everything. It just seems to me DC has a hard time just getting it together.
Yeah, I mean, if... Affleck is like, it's too much work for me to do both. I think he's just kind of using that as an excuse, and it's probably he didn't want to deal with all the fucking studio interference, because obviously whoever's running DC does not know how to build a universe. They're like, everything's going to be super dark, and everyone thinks it sucks.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... There's a lot of potential, but I just...
I mean, they're just doing the exact opposite of the TV DC universe, and it's not working at all.
No. And I mean, props to, you know, the DCU as far as, you know, television is concerned, because I'm enjoying everything that they're putting out. But, you know, these big screen adaptations that they keep trying to do just seem to really be missing the mark for some reason.
You know who... They should call in to fix this Batman crap.
The Strike Force?
Well, yes, but the directors of John Wick. Now, those guys are like proven action movie dudes. If anybody could make a non-sucky Batman film, I think those guys could do it.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, that...
And if Affleck gives up on being Batman... Keanu, it's for just the whole John Wick 3, the Batman.
All along, I was really Bruce Wayne.
This time, instead of killing his dog, they killed his Robin, so he's got to go on a vengeance spree.
Damn. Well, you know, as we digress and segue into our next topic, so we've got Ghost in the Shell, which I've got to say I'm really excited for. A little bit more anime news. It looks like Warner Brothers is going to be doing a live-action Attack on Titan movie. And I was never really big into the whole anime thing, but this was one that I actually enjoyed.
I've never watched Attack on Titan. I've always seen, like, I've seen clips of it, and I've seen every year at Dragon Con there's a bunch of Attack on Titan people who are like, naked or Attack on Titan? Oh, he's being followed by people with giant, impractical machine guns. It's got to be an Attack of Titan cosplay.
But, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's surged in popularity and everything else. And I know that there was a Japanese version that didn't quite do so well. But I got to say, an American rendition, there's a lot of potential. And I'm, you know, cautiously optimistic, I guess, is what I would say. I mean, there's some potential that could be really badass, or it could just be really, really crappy.
Yeah, I just don't know if there's... I know all the anime fans would know what Attack on Titan is, but I don't know if there's enough mainstream knowledge of it to be like have a, you know, wide-reaching audience. Because, you know, Ghost in the Shell, it's been around a while. Pretty much even people that aren't familiar with anime have at least heard of Ghost
in the
Shell.
But, I mean, I think Attack on Titan, I think it's safe to give it that level of credibility, too. I mean, I know, I'm old.
I don't know what the kids are talking about these days.
That's why you got to branch out, man. You're going to get rusty.
Fuck you, I'm just going to sit in my basement watching Cowboy Bebop all day.
Get off my lawn!
Exactly. Why can't we get a live-action Cowboy Bebop movie? Now, there's a movie, anime movie I can get behind.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to see that. As long as it's done right.
Yeah.
Next, a little bit of Marvel news. So we got our first look at the Infinity War production. And, you know, kind of a first look teaser, I guess. And, dude... freaking excited.
Yeah, this is that one little like, hey, we've started filming video they posted when mostly green screen, but you look like it was some kind of alien set, and you had Chris Pratt in full Star-Lord gear, but standing next to, you know, freaking Tom Holland and Robert Downey Jr.
Like, who?
Yeah, who the fuck's Tom Holland? Spider-Man. The guy who's playing Spider-Man now.
Dude, but
I still don't know who he is other than he's playing Spider-Man.
But dude, he did a good job, absolutely killed Spider-Man. It's about time we get a good Spider-Man.
Even the trailers of the new Spider-Man movie is looking good. So yeah, it was awesome seeing those three guys together on a set. It's like, this is going to be freaking epic.
Yes. I don't know. Like I'm almost concerned that there's just going to be too much awesomeness happening and my brain's not going to be able to process it and I'm just going to have a meltdown.
Yeah, cuz when they went from this is going to be a two-parter to, you know, one movie. I don't know if it's you can contain this story in one film. I mean, it's going to be, you know, information overload. Maybe.
I mean, golly, we got Thanos, Hulk, Loki, Captain America, Thor, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, Winter Soldier, Doctor Strange, Vision, Nick Fury, Gamora, Nebula, Groot, Drax, Mantis, Black Widow. And the Collector, and still others. Like, holy shit. Like,
yeah, this is going to be a five-hour movie.
Like, it's going to be like, you know, freaking Lord of the Rings, except Marvel. Which, I know you're not a big Lord of the Rings fan, but, you know, this... I mean, at least the only trees that walk in is Groot.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know what the runtime of this movie is going to be, but it's going to have to be longer than most to get all of that story in one.
It's going to be, full-length feature film with a 90-minute, or, yeah, 90-minute intermission.
There's going to be like a 50-minute intermission because it's going to be a four-hour movie.
And then up next, so a lot of buzz about Kevin Smith, you know, here in the news lately, and one of the projects that I'm kind of interested in is a Spawn TV,
Spawn spinoffs.
There we go. TV show that's BBC America that he is going to be working on, and I've been wanting to see Spawn. Like, come on, like probably one of the most badass characters I can think of, and.
But yeah, this is going to be a spinoff, though, of following the characters of the two cops from the Spawn comics, Sam and Twitch. So it's basically going to be like a procedural cop show set in a McFarland Spawn universe. So it's kind of it sounds interesting because I always like those two characters and them having to deal with the supernatural shit going on around them.
I just see there being a lot of room for some badassery. You know, because of the darkness of the Spawn universe and stuff. But there's also a lot that, you know, Kevin can do from a comedic angle, too. You know, so and I'm like...
Then again, if you look at the characters of Sam and Twitch, you got a fat guy and a skinny guy. They haven't announced casting yet, but this could be a role for for Kevin himself and Jay. Jay and Bob is Sam and Twitch.
Well, all right, and that brings us into our next topic. So, you know, the studios, you know, and people giving Kevin Wright, you know, or shit about some of his films and then backing out of Clerks 3 and stuff. So Kevin Smith's basically come out and said, hey, I want to do, you know, fuck it on the rights to Jay and Silent Bob. So we're going to go ahead and make a third film.
Yeah, he recently announced that, you know, even though he said, like, hey, I'm doing this and I'm also doing this, you know, he's one who likes to announce stuff way early and build anticipation. But his last, you know, he wanted to make Clerks 3 and he just couldn't get the, you know, since he was having to deal with the studio again, not able to do anything independently, you know, there was a lot of back and forth.
Sucks too, because, I mean,
and eventually it just took too long and some of the original actors decided that they didn't want to be in it. And they're like, I can't do the story without everyone involved. And some of those guys aren't really actors anymore. They've moved on to other things. So it made that project not possible. And then he tried to turn Mallrats into a TV series and he just never could find a studio that would want to release that, because he pitched it to a whole bunch of different networks and it never kind of came to fruition. So finally he's like, I don't own the rights to these movies, but I own the characters Jay and Bob. So let's do another Jay and Bob movie.
And I mean, I'm cool with that, but I'm, you know, Clerks, the original, is always going to have a special place with me. Clerks 2 put Clerks in the mainstream. Like, people that had never seen the original Clerks were quoting shit from Clerks 2 and everything. So
then again, Clerks 2, if, like I said, the Clerks 3 never happens.
That or I just hung out with a bunch of raunchy assholes that, you know, are into that.
But it kind of wrapped up those storylines of those characters where, you know, if you never hear from those characters again, at least at the end, the Clerks have grown up. Dante's married and got a kid. They now own the Quick Stop. They at least left them in a happy place if we never hear from these characters again. And he's also said, you know, if these movies don't get made, he's planning to release his scripts as comic books. So we'll at least get to see what those stories would have been if they had gotten made. So that's going to be an interesting project to see down the road, being able to read Clerks 3, the comic book, and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Jay and Silent Bob movie is going to be, early title is Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, where basically it's going to be making fun of, you know, the reboot culture of today, which I hate.
What? There's a reboot culture?
Yeah, they want to reboot everything. And that's pretty much what happens is someone decides to reboot the Blunt Man and Chronic movie from the Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back movie, and they must go to Hollywood to stop their movie from getting rebooted.
And shenanigans ensue.
As always.
Yes. Well, speaking of something with a not-so-happy ending, we love board games. I'm going to talk about a board game I never loved quite so much just because I couldn't quite become the tycoon that I always wanted to. But Monopoly, the people have spoken and they have voted. The Thimble will no longer be a produced character to play.
Let's pause and pour a little liquor up for a bit, homie.
The Thimble that nobody wanted to be anyway. It's like, so.
Yeah. So if they announce a replacement piece.
Well, there's actually a poll going on now with several different replacement pieces. So, you know, I think that there is, I don't know, probably 20 or 30 different, you know, little character-esque figurines. One of which looks like a T-Rex. I would go with the T-Rex, me personally. Hashtag is one.
God.
Yeah. Fuck you. I don't see a Harambe, so I mean,
I'm highly surprised in this. Yes. Yeah, if people are voting on this on the internet, I'm highly surprised. That's not a thing.
And in fact, I may see if I can't just shit. That's the one thing that's going to put the cigar nerds. We're about to go viral, man.
Start a petition for the Harambe Monopoly piece.
Monopoly for Harambe.
God. No thimble, no peace.
And the final bit of news. So Disney has been, you know, really doing a lot with, you know, bringing some of their productions to live action. You know, most recently we got Beauty and the Beast that is set to happen really soon. I know they did the same thing with Jungle Book, and it looks like they are now doing the same thing with Lion King, and Donald Glover will play Simba. I'm not quite sure.
Why?
I don't know.
Follow this under the things we don't need category. I can understand a live-action Beauty and the Beast or Snow White or something like that, because there's human characters in these movies. You know, even Jungle Book, mostly animals. There's at least one human person in it. But this is all animals. It's and the, you know, the animals can't act, so it's going to be like mainly CGI, which is this number form of an animated movie. So yeah, this kind of project does not make a damn bit of sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to shit on it too much until I see it, and I don't know.
What's it's that? The circle of life.
Exactly. I mean, I just can't wait to see who's getting the role of Timon and Pumbaa.
Like, Jay and Silent Bob.
You look like a fat pig and you smell like one.
Damn.
And that'll wrap us up for Nerd News, unless you got anything else to contribute, my friend.
No, I think those bad ideas are going to end it there. Check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at CigarNerdPod. Go to iTunes, like, subscribe, share, you know, leave us a comment. You know, that helps people find the show. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Promo code CigarNerds, 20% off your order. Also, check out Real Men Smoke Cigars. Pick up your Cigar Nerd shirts. And with that, you're all going to die down here. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.